Welcome back, everyone, to season two of my podcast, Red Flags, Green Flags, Modern Psychology for Everyday Drama. In this second season, we will explore the world of work relationships and the different types of drama that occur in the workplace. We spend about two-thirds of our lives at work, and work-related conflict and drama are an inescapable part of organizational life. No one is immune to it, and so learning how to identify red flags at work and how to deal with them is important to your career success and also to your overall well-being. Too many people feel demotivated and unhappy at work, and the cause for this distress can often be linked to toxic work environments, bad management, organizational politics, and also overwork. When the workplace should be a source of enhanced self-esteem, growth, and sense of belonging, it can quickly become a source of stress, discomfort, and a reason for your decline in mental health. Now, in season two, we will talk about various work-related drama, from bad management practices and toxic work environments to how to deal effectively with difficult and deceitful colleagues and how best to navigate politics in the workplace. A season jam-packed with organizational drama, real stories, and workplace red flags. Also, we will dive into the psychology of human behavior at work and identify what are green flags at work and discuss best practices, how to increase your chances of success in a modern workplace. Now, we will kick off today's episode with a topic I've spent many years investigating and love to talk about, but is hardly given any attention to in the media or even taught in business schools, while it's so vital to your success and well-being at work, and that is office politics. There is such a taboo around office politics because it often has a negative connotation to it. Besides the negative aspects and toxic behaviors we connect in our minds to politics at work, there are also very positive elements to it as well. Think of building your personal brand at work, or creating strategic alliances in and outside of the organization, or learning how to manage yourself effectively when dealing with political attacks. After listening to this podcast, you will understand that everyone needs to build their political intelligence at work, and that it is a skill set you can learn which can help you to achieve your goals without having to trash people along the way. In this podcast, I will also introduce to you my 5 P's model on how to build your political intelligence to advance your career success and also help neutralize political attacks if you encounter them. I will also deep dive into the psychology of office politics, covering topics of power, influence, and psychopathology, and provide practical strategies on how to champion the political arena at work. So as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, when I talk about office politics, a lot of people, you know, think about backstabbing tactics and they think about the negative aspects of what it is. And a lot of people do not want to engage in office politics at work because of this negative connotation. It seems to be kind of like a taboo. Even when I try to teach it in a business school, you know, a lot of people initially will think, oh, wait a minute, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. You should be teaching people bad tactics and, you know, manipulative behaviors in the workplace or in class. But I think that's kind of the misconception that we have when we think about office politics. Another reason why a lot of people also don't want to engage or learn more about office politics is because they link the word politics to what we see on TV and therefore also kind of feel that they want to stay away from that as well. And so this prevents us from actually learning more about what it really is and how important it is, because, you know, your success in business heavily depends on your ability to persuade and influence other people. But office politics is basically a skill set that everyone needs to learn. Either it doesn't matter if you're an employee or a manager or, you know, a longstanding leader. Everyone needs to learn what office politics really is and how to engage with it. And so in this podcast, I'm definitely going to talk about, of course, the negative aspects of politics, office politics, such as the backstabbing and the gossiping and, you know, forging alliances against other people. But it goes far much further than that. Office politics also entails your ability to, you know, kind of, as I mentioned in the introduction as well, to build your, strengthen your reputation or your personal brand within the workplace. Or it's also about building strategic alliances and dealing with yourself as you acquire more power. And so before we jump into the nuts and bolts of office politics and we talk more about the psychology underlying it, let's first start with a definition of what office politics actually is. So office politics refers to the strategies, the dynamics, and the behaviors used by individuals or by groups in organizations to pursue personal interests or to gain more power or control or influence, let's say, over organizational resources or status. Now, there are many different ways we can gain more power or attain more power in the organization, good ways as well as bad ways. The way you actually attain more power in the organization really depends on various factors, such as your own moral compass. It also very much depends on, you know, your well-being. It also really depends on your competencies and your overall belief about what power is. Organizational politics also involves the unofficial structure of the organization. So besides the formal structure where there's clear command and control and everyone is, you know, based on their position, has a formal authority in the organization, there's also the informal structure of the organization. And so basically, if you have strong connections with decision makers and leaders and other very important people in the organization, you can also achieve and attain a lot of power because of having strong relationships. So power is not just only about the position that you hold or the titles that you hold in the organization, but also based on the relationships that you forge in organizations. So building relationships is really, really important if you want to succeed in organizational politics, and it doesn't always have to be in a bad way. Talking about power, it's a fairly central tenet to understanding what organizational politics is. And as I mentioned before, you know, when we think about power, power is what we have if we have formal power in the organization. So if I'm a director in an organization, then most people will consider me to be a powerful person because I have access over resources. I can control and decide how people work, for example. So that formal kind of position that I have gives me formal power, positional power. However, there are multiple ways of also attaining power in the organization. And one of the other ways of how you can achieve a lot of power is through personal power. And personal power in the organization refers to, for example, your expertise. So how much you know. Maybe you have a certain expertise in a certain field. For example, you know a lot about the technology. You know about how the market works. Having that expert power or expertise can also give you a certain level of power in the organization, to which it might protect you or help you to gain more resources that you would like to have beyond, let's say, the more formal structural positional power that you might have in the organization. And as I also mentioned before, your connectivity, your relationships that you have in the organization can also be a form of personal power. So who you know and who you're connected to can also be a source of power for you in the organization. Part of the positional power is also something called reward power. And so reward power, those people in the organizations that can provide rewards, not just only financial rewards, but think of, for example, if you work in the airline industry, people who can also decide, you know, on which aircraft you're going to work or who you're going to work with might also have a certain power within that organization because of their ability to provide access to certain services or provide rewards in that perspective as well. So as you can see, people can use power strategically, and there's many ways of how you can gain power in an organization that might give you more access to resources, give you more status, or help you, of course, to climb the organizational ladder. One major misconception a lot of people have when they think about power is that power has to be attained in an aggressive manner. Let's say, for example, you know, by taking away from other people or, you know, engaging in cutthroat activities as a way of, you know, getting power from other people. And this is often called the Machiavellian way of achieving power. Now, Machiavellian, or Niccolo Machiavellian, was an Italian philosopher who in the 1500s wrote a book called The Prince, and which describes basically this, you know, this political astuteness as being aggressive, cunning, and deceitful. And so what we see today, a lot of people think still that politics and organizational politics is all about being cunning and deceitful and manipulative as a way to achieve much more power. Now, if we dive into the literature and we look into the science actually shows us something completely different. Though the Machiavellian approach of aggressively taking power from other people at the cost of other people could get you momentarily power, but it's not sustainable over time. The science actually shows us that you know, showing pro-social behavior, such as, you know, giving resources to other people, helping others, is a great way to actually get power. Because if people see that you take their interests to heart and that you're working to help further, you know, the status and the reputation of the group that you're serving, then they're more likely to put you into a position of power. And many studies have actually been done where they've looked at how students in dorms quickly attain power, for example, or how within the military and within squad teams, how people are given power over time. And it's interesting to see that the people that serve other people, the people that are empathetic and listen to other people, those people who show a lot of professionalism as well and who build strong connections are often those who receive sustainable power over time and who climb those kind of like organizational or hierarchical structures within those social groups very rapidly. And I think this misconception really needs to be addressed. Because if we started to look at attaining power from a different perspective, we might also change our approaches. We might be much more collaborative with other people as a way of understanding how power is actually achieved and what we can do about that in a more kind of ethical manner, in a much more supportive manner than how it's often done today. So when we talk about situational power and how power is given to you based on the relationships that you have, you know, there's many examples around the world where we can see how important building relationships is in your organization. And very often a lot of people, you know, especially those people that think that the only way that they can be promoted or, you know, that their success is defined by merit, they don't really consider the personal relationship aspect as something very important to their success in your organization. Of course, your skill set's extremely important as a way of as a determining factor, but your connections, or wasta as it's called here, is also equally important. So a lot of people, especially in the Middle East region, invest a lot in their personal relationships at work. And so they you know, meet up with people outside, they go to their birthdays, they attend other gatherings so that they can start building up very strong relationships. And a lot of time, money, and effort is invested in this because of the importance of having these strong relationships and also the benefits that they will have for you also within the organization. In China, for example, it's called Guangxi. So, of course, in the Chinese context, Guangxi is also considered an extremely important aspect of succeeding at work. And so building and investing in your relationships is extremely important. And everywhere around the world, you know, there are different terms that are used for emphasizing how important social relationships are and investing in it. And so, you know, I often like to say your network is your net worth, right? And so, but sometimes when we enter the organization, we don't really think about that. We just think our personal successes is all that matters. And the higher you get into the organization, the higher the ladder you climb in the organization, the more you realize it's not about your own abilities, but it's much more about what you can do through other people. How do you influence other people? How do you get people together, especially people with opposing ideas and perspectives, and how do you create an environment where everybody wants to achieve common goals and directives? And basically, your ability as a leader really depends on your ability to influence other and to inspire other people to achieve that goal that you have for them, and also bringing those opposing ideas and needs and interests also to the table. So really, building relationships is very critical. So let's now dive into the psychology of office politics. Now, there's a lot to be said about this because psychology, it plays a major role in understanding why people actually engage in office politics, either for good reasons or for bad reasons. Now, one of the primary reasons, psychological reasons, why people, of course, engage in office politics is personal motives. And personal motives, of course, could be power is one of them, but also more control. Some people really want to have more control over their lives and other people, and are very driven that way, or through high achievement and status. And so when we know that people care a lot about status and control and power, then they will be more likely to be engaged also in office politics. But what's also interesting is that autonomy can also play a major role, right? So wanting to work more independently or having more freedom in that perspective. Another personal motive to drive people to engage in office politics is recognition and that need to be seen. And so wanting to be seen by other people and being driven by that can also be a major reason why people will engage in office politics. Another psychological aspect we need to take into consideration when we think about organizational politics is perceptions and judgments. So why some people engage, for example, in bad organizational practices or bad behaviors in the organization as part of organizational politics is also because what people perceive. And for example, do people perceive that other people get more than you do, or you've been treated unfairly, or that maybe you perceive that you're department or social group or teams have not been given the resources that it should be getting. And so feelings of jealousy and feelings of inadequacy or other emotions that could be influencing what you perceive is happening in the organization can also therefore influence people to participate in both negative and positive organizational practices. And very often when people perceive that they're being treated in an unjust way or unfairly, then they might also be more likely to engage in more deceitful or maybe more counterproductive work behaviors. And one more aspect of you know, psychology and organizational politics is, as we attain more power, as we, you know, as we grow in the organization, what a lot of people don't realize is that actually power can affect the way you think and the way you behave, but also affect the way you feel. Now, for example, you know, the science is very clear on this, and it shows that as we grow in power, as we attain more organizational power, that we eventually start to think more in abstract ways. We pass judgment much more faster. We think that we know much more, and therefore evaluate situations more rapidly, and use less critical thinking skills in the moment of things. But also, when it comes to emotions, what you know, the science also shows is that we become actually less empathetic when we actually grow in the organization. We have to, of course, make more difficult decisions. Also, what power can do to us in terms of how we feel about ourselves is sometimes we feel we can get away with stuff more than we actually can. And so when we put in a position of power, we tend to be more willing to engage in cheating behaviors, or we might be more willing to engage in inappropriate behaviors. And so feeling that we can get closer to people or, you know, say bad things to other people seems to be easier because we feel that because we are in a position of power, we're much more protected. And sometimes that can kind of get to our heads, right? And so now there's also the dark, what I call the dark psychology of organizational politics, which often explains why people do engage in very manipulative and deceitful behavior. And one aspect of this darker psychology is self-serving biases. So people will often, you know, be more interested in their own personal interests, but they'll be willing to overstep other people or engage in bad behaviors just to achieve their goals. And so what we often see happening in organizations is managers taking credit for other people's work in terms of boosting their own self-image or achieving more of their own personal goals. Engaging in rumors as a way to hurt other people, but therefore also to improve your own reputation. That's also another example of self-serving biases. And also blaming others or deflecting blame to other people as a way to protect yourself. Another example of dark psychology is, again, this Machiavellian personality trait where people feel that they can engage in deceitful and manipulative behavior as a way to achieve personal interests or to hurt others in the process. And so, unfortunately, this does happen a lot. So there's this personality trait aspect that is related to this. But also the organization also plays a huge role in that. And so the organizational culture can also sometimes be very toxic, which fosters this kind of behavior, and where, you know, deceiving others and mistreating others is not really seen as something really bad, and it's almost tolerated in that perspective. So again, the psychology of office politics is really important to understand the motives and why people really engage in good and bad behaviors when it comes to organizational politics. Psychology aspect of office politics is the prevalence of psychopaths within senior positions in the organization. Now, the prevalence of psychopaths within the global population is around 1%. But if we look at organizations, various papers will state anything between 5 to 10 or even 15% within executive roles. And so how come organizations, certain organizations, how have that many psychopaths within their leadership positions often relates to various aspects. And now, one major reason is, of course, the organizational context or the culture, and some environments allow psychopaths to flourish. Psychopaths often, you know, characterized as people with a lack of empathy, willing to walk over other people to achieve their own personal gains, manipulative, deceitful, and are hungry for power and positions of leadership. But they're also seen as people who are very charismatic, and always know kind of the right things to say. And so this combination of environment with person, and once there is a good fit there, that where an organization basically appreciates this kind of charismatic behavior and, values a lot the people's personal performance and personal achievements over that of, let's say, team goals and achievements, or over that of team achievements, often are very vulnerable to, attracting psychopaths within their organization and also allowing them to flourish into key positions or senior roles within the organization. Of course, with all kinds of consequences related to that, to the organization, to employee morale, of course, leading to significant costs and also, of course, to attrition of employees as well. So far, we've talked about power and the psychology of office politics, and mainly around this kind of notion of power. And power is not the only construct or the only key tenet that we need to think of. Office politics is so much more than just power in itself. Office politics is also about, you know, building your reputation or your personal brand within an organization. And so, you know, if you want to fare well and you want to achieve your organizational objectives, or you want to be promoted, or you want to achieve more success within your career, then working on your personal reputation is also part of building that, what I call that political intelligence, right, that everyone needs to learn. And so how do you do that? Well, you know, participating, being very collaborative, and working with other departments, making sure that you show up and you are professional and ethical about how you work in your organization is extremely important to be also perceived as someone who is credible, and someone who is extremely professional. So being conscious about your personal reputation and actively trying to build your personal brand within the organization is very important. Other things that you can do to help build your personal brand in the organization is by making sure that you participate in, you know, and activities outside of your own formal role. So maybe you could be engaged in participating in innovation challenges or getting involved in work groups, for example, to help, or for example, to get involved in interest groups or work groups within the organization as a way to kind of show your abilities and your skill sets, but also to learn more and to build stronger connections outside of the departments and outside maybe the offices that you normally would operate in. And this way, people will get to know you better. People will get to understand that you are willing to work with other people. And if you're also able to show that you can protect, the interests of the different social groups or the departments that you work with or people that you work with, and that you help to boost their reputation, then more likely they will be more willing to keep you in the organization, but also help you to grow in power. Because if you protect them, they're more willing to keep you there. So your reputation is extremely important. How you show up is extremely important. And what you do for others is really important, right? So perception is reality. So make sure in a positive way to really do more than just only think about this is the job that I have to do and that's it. If you care about being seen and also enhancing your political status in the organization. Besides reputation, of course, and besides power, building strategic alliances is an extremely important skill set to have as you grow in the organization. And as I mentioned before, growing in the organization also means that you have to now learn how to achieve more through others, not through your own self. And I think a lot of people have a lot of difficulty with that, thinking that I want to do it myself, or I can't trust other people to do good work. And so being able to let go, and not only let go, but also leverage other people to achieve common objectives or organizational objectives is extremely important. So going out and forging alliances, forging strong relationships with people that share similar interests like you, but also you'll have to deal with people in any kind of social group that also don't have similar interests or goals like you do. So how do you get people together with opposing interests or ideas or conflicting interests? And how can you build alliances that can help you to achieve your objectives? And this is an extremely important skill set to have, because it's not very easy to do. And Now, let me give you one example of how you can actually start building strong relationships, which I think is a very fascinating technique that you can apply to better understand how we can deal with, you know, different concerns and different interests and how we can pull people together to help achieve common goals. And this one technique comes from Japanese business management, which is called nemawashi. And nemawashi is basically a technique where kind of it means kind of how do you unroot, you know, like a bonsai tree? How do you take it out of the ground very subtly so that you can plant it into another ground? So nemawashi is understanding the channels, the root channels, and understanding how we have to delicately remove all the ground from each of those channels before we can transplant that into a new kind of environment. And so how does nemawashi apply back into the business world? Well, basically, if you want to want to make change or you want to propose new initiatives, then it's really important that you just don't go in and bulldoze and say, well, this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to make it work. Often people who are, you know, who are promoted into a new position of leadership often think, well, I've got the power now, you know, let me just go ahead and try to make things, try to change things in the organization. And what will happen if other people's perspectives and interests are not taken into consideration, it can actually backfire. Even though you are in a high position within the organization, those forces around you from different stakeholders can actually bring you down. So it's good to understand that it's not only you who decides, but the people around you need to decide with you. And so going out to, you know, meeting people informally, also outside of your, you know, outside of the organization, and getting to know them personally and getting to understand their desires, their personal values, their interests with your initiatives, but also their concerns or why they might also go against your change initiatives and how it might impact them. And so by doing this and by, you know, spending a lot of time and investing your time into getting to know the different people that you're impacting or you're affecting through your change and through your behaviors and through your strategies is a great way of understanding how you can maybe find new ways of bringing your ideas forward in a way that more people would be interested to work with you. So by building these alliances, you can basically better assess the political motives that other people might have and also prevent potential attacks that might happen to you as you forge strong relationships with other people to help achieve your own personal goals. And so, you know, alliances are great for you to make sure that you get people together to move in a certain direction, but you will also need to consider also the potential drawbacks and the potential pushbacks that you will have as you start to get people together to achieve common directives. And so being able to identify that and is really important. And so in addition to that, I would also say having external partnerships with advisors and mentors, but also extremely important to help you make better decisions for yourself. So now we've talked about power, we've talked about building your reputation, building and also forging strong alliances. Another important aspect about building your political intelligence is your ability to manage yourself, right? Your personal management, I call this. And personal management really relates heavily towards your emotional intelligence. So when you are dealt difficult situations or you are in conflict with other people or you are politically attacked by other people, how do you deal with this? Now, if you're very reactive, you can, of course, get very upset and angry. But then again, this anger can actually hurt you in the long run. Or sometimes getting you angry or upset is done on purpose. So your ability to really kind of take a step back and look at the situation, understand that it might be affecting you negatively or emotionally, but thinking about the best way to respond to that situation is extremely important. And so that personal mastery or that personal management is an extremely important aspect of, you know, of knowing how to deal with difficult political situations or how to maneuver yourself also in terms of your, you know, your personal branding and your personal reputation, but also how to build alliances, right? Maybe you might not feel that you're such a great relationship builder or that you're someone who can forge strong relationships and understand why that is. What holds you back from wanting to work with others versus yourself? So being extremely reflective of how organizational settings impact you and what gives you wings and what holds you back. And also, as I mentioned before, is this fact of how acquiring power can affect us, right? Can affect us cognitively, emotionally, and also to affect our decision-making. How can we deal with attaining more power? And so also making sure that power doesn't corrupt us, because we already know from research that it can corrupt us and influence our decision-making and emotions in many different ways, and also our behavior. How do we effectively work with power over time so that we can become much more better leaders or better influencers and use power in a more ethical way that serves others while also serving our own personal interests, but is not always used in a way that will hurt other people. This final kind of strategic aspect that I think is really important to help you to, you know, competency to help you build your political intelligence in the workplace is what I really call the politics, right? Capital P politics. And this is where you try to identify, the toxic behaviors that people might engage in the workplace and what you can do against them. And now when we think about how can we counter political attacks, we often think, well, you attack me, I attack you. But that's not always the best strategy, because sometimes people can try to lure you out just to make you look bad. So it's also really important that you think carefully about what you should do once you do experience a political attack in the workplace. And there are certain ways that you can deal with this, of course, right? So first of all, if we go back in terms of building your or enhancing your personal brand or reputation in the workplace, that is really important. So if people see you as credible, as professional, and as ethical, then if someone tries to politically hurt you, then at least you have that overall reputation that, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. This person is very professional. Why would that happen to that person? Building your reputation is really important because it helps you to at least buffer against initial attacks. Another way to buffer against attacks would be coming back to your expert power. And so if you have expert power, expertise in the organization, which is seen as a kind of a unique selling point or something that other people don't have, that can also help you temporarily to buffer political attacks, or at least to give you some more time to think about how to counter them. And so learning eventually how to counter and neutralize political attacks is something that definitely you should also learn over time. We have to learn also how to neutralize office politics, and we can do that sometimes way in advance before the political attacks actually happen. So buffering is good. Building strategic alliances and having a strong reputation at work definitely helps you to kind of temporarily deal with those political attacks, but also knowing how to neutralize specific attacks is also really important. However, to go into detail about all the different tactics that you can apply goes beyond, of course, the scope of this podcast. However, in my book, my new book, Red Flags, Green Flags, I talk about this, and I also specifically talk about what tactics that you can apply to kind of counteract political attacks that happen in the workplace. What are some red flags that you really need to watch out for in the organization, in terms of toxic behaviors and in terms of bad practices, let's say? What are the things that you really need to start watching out for? I think that's extremely important so that you can anticipate certain behaviors before they happen, or you can see when certain behaviors are bad so that you can do something about it. Now, the first red flag, I would say, is when your boss tries to take credit for your work. Now, unfortunately, this happens a lot in organizations. And so when this does happen, you need to think carefully about how to address it. If you immediately get upset about it, then of course, this might not look good for you, but you might also find other ways of how to address, colleagues or bosses taking credit for your work. And one way you could do that is informally or after the meeting or when that actually happens, afterwards, take your boss aside and say, look, I really appreciate, you presenting today, but I would have really appreciated you acknowledging me for my work that I have done. And so again, it's a nasty thing, and it's unfortunately something that does happen a lot in the organization. But think carefully about also if you how to deal with that. But at the same time, if that's also a boss that you want to work with for a long time, because if he or she does that once, more likely he or she will do that again. So that's definitely a red flag to watch out for, and it also gives you a moment to reflect and think about how to address that more effectively. Another red flag to watch out for at the workplace is a boss who might kind of keep you away from information or withhold information from you or keep you away from other people in the organization and isolate you in that perspective. And why sometimes bosses do this is because then they might want to get rid of you, or they feel that you're growing too fast and they want to stomp your growth and potential promotion in the organization. And so isolating you is also a very typical example of insecure bosses that see you as a potential threat or that want to get you out. So when that happens, that's why it's really important to have those connections inside the organization that go beyond your formal hierarchy structure, but maybe you have connections to other departments and other decision makers and leaders within the organization, so that when that does happen, you can always fall back onto the informal network in the structure of the organization so that you can get that protection when a boss tries to do that to you. A third red flag is gossip, when that happens in the organization. And unfortunately, gossip is something that happens a lot. People talk informally with each other, and gossip can really, really hurt your reputation. And so it's also very hard to actually counter gossip, especially when rumors spread in the organization about you. It's very hard to go against that. So what you should definitely do, and this is where, again, forging alliances and having a strong reputation is a way of preventing you from being affected too much by gossip. And unfortunately, you can't always protect yourself from it. And so it's also definitely part of organizational life. But being aware of it is extremely important, and knowing how to deal with it is also very important as well. The final red flag that I want to mention is when organizations don't have the right checks and balances in place. So basically, this is a breeding ground for toxic environments to emerge, and a lot of the bad behaviors that we spoke to about today in today's podcast, for that to kind of flourish, right? And so if there's not the right checks and balances in place, it makes it very difficult to ensure that people are treated fairly, and that people are also people can actually speak up in the organization when things do happen, and that they're actually be listened to. So I think that's also a very important red flag to look out for in the organization. So what we've learned so far is that organizational politics is not something that we should walk away from, and it's not something only which is a taboo or something just negative. Organizational politics, or what I call building your political intelligence, is a multifaceted skill set that you have to learn if you want to be able to advance your career success. And as you grow higher in the organization, it becomes so much more important. We've learned that it's not just about identifying toxic behaviors in the workplace and neutralizing those behaviors, but it's also about forging strong strategic alliances in and outside of the organization. It's about building your reputation and thinking about your personal brand management. And it's also about you considering how you manage yourself and your personal mastery as you grow in your positional power in the organization, and how you deal with power so that you don't allow power to corrupt you. And so I hope that I've been able to bring across a very important topic that not a lot of people speak about, and that I've inspired you to think more, positively about building your political intelligence and dealing more effectively in positive change through others and engaging more positively with organizational politics. So thank you for listening today. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you're not following me on social media, you can follow me on Instagram under the name Modern Day Psychologist or Dr. TikTok on TikTok. And so I look forward to engaging with you in my next podcast about work relationships. And again, thank you so much for listening today, and see you soon.
Are you ready?